Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you since 1997 on KKUP Radio with over 250 guests and still going strong in their 12th year of weekly broadcasting, the International Taz and Paula Show brings to you expansive, engaging, and groundbreaking intensity on radio and now on the internet airwaves today. Listen live every Thursday or visit Embracing Mother Earth's archives, exclusive articles, ask questions, and receive actual answers from guests anytime at TazandPaulaShow.com. Taz and Paula's special guests are experts coming from all walks of life, energizing our lives with a passion that inspires and teaches us with each of their compelling personal life journeys, with roots from ancient wisdom and bridging it with modern science. We hope today's show touches the wisdom of your heart. And now, Taz and Paula.
Well, we just love to have this special guest aboard with us today, and we are sure you will too. You are listening to the Taz and Paula Show, and I'm Paula.
And I'm Taz. Our guest is Adam Atman, and he's witty. He's funny, and foremost, he's an acupuncturist. He's always having something up his sleeve as he vibrates to his formula of success, and meaning he's always on his toes to bring the latest to his patients. He is the producer and talk show host of his very own radio program on 91.5 FM, KKUP Cupertino. I'm sure all our listeners listen to him. It's called The New Medicines Show, and it must have been around now for maybe 10 years. We'll clarify that amount of years in just a moment. And he's on every Thursday, except for the fourth Thursday of the month, from 10 to 11 a.m.
Well, Adam has been studying Asian medicine for 32 years. He says that he still studies every day and says that this is not a subject that an acupuncturist can ever complete the study. He began his studies in Europe in 1978 and has continued in Belgium in 1982, China in 1985, Japan in 1986, and America in 1988. He completed the American studies to become licensed in acupuncture in 1991 and continued to apprentice and with senior practitioners. During this time, he also completed his studies in medical Qigong. To qualify for licensing in California, acupuncturists must study in a four-year postgraduate program and pass a comprehensive state licensing examination. Wow, I didn't know all of this about Adam. This is really incredible. Well, once he was licensed, acupuncturists are required to renew their license every 2 years and complete continuing education as a condition of renewal. And Adam has been teaching acupuncture for 12 years. And I'm just really amazed of all his background, Taz.
I know. You know, you just never know what's underneath the cover, and this guy is really something else. Adam Atman, it's really exciting to have you with us. You all are on top of the world here, giving us information, and we just love it. Welcome.
Well, I thought he was with us, but he's gone.
Oh, really? Well, we'll...
Not here.
Okay. Oh, well, we'll have to tell him. Doesn't he know how to be a guest? I'll have to razz him about this.
Here he is. Just a minute.
Okay.
Hi, Adam.
Hi there.
Can
you hear me
aboard.
Okay?
Well,
thank
yeah,
you. Sorry. It took a little while to get on board, but here I am.
Well, we just got through introducing you, and I just got through saying how impressed I am with your background.
Thank you, Paula.
So we are so happy to have you with us.
Thank you.
You know, well, Adam, I was going to say, did you always want to become an acupuncturist?
No, you know, my first interest in healing was with Diet and then Qigong. When I was 16 years old, I had, throughout my childhood, I had a lot of bad allergies, and I had a very weak body, really, a lot of sicknesses and illnesses. And when I was 16, I found out about eating a mucus-free diet and started studying naturopathic ideas, and I found that I cleared all my allergic reactivity and all the terrible hay fever I used to suffer and the colds and so on by using diet. And so that was an exciting discovery for me. And then when I was 18 years old, I met my first Qigong teacher, and I really got into the practice of Qigong, and I studied with my first teacher for 7 years pretty intensively. And he was a very talented Qigong practitioner, a practitioner of various Chinese healing arts, Mongolian warrior massage and Qigong and Tai Chi. And he used to do very deep body work on people and very powerful energy. And so my first introduction to healing with Asian healing arts was through the Qigong traditions. And then after about 7 years of studying with him, I moved to China. I decided to start studying acupuncture at the same time as I was continuing to study Qigong. And that's when I formally began my study of acupuncture. And my first acupuncture lessons involved actually sitting and listening to my teacher reading from this ancient book, the Nei Jing, which is the Bible of acupuncture. It's a 2,400-year-old book that sort of originates 90% of everything that we do in acupuncture. Everything we do in acupuncture comes from that book. Nobody exactly knows where that book comes from, but that's the one that you should start studying when you study acupuncture. So my first learning with acupuncture was being read to from this book by a number of different doctors who would then, talk about what it meant and demonstrate, and I would watch them treat patients and so on.
So you were really inspired to do this, through your own health issues and learning about them. And what a great way to become a doctor. You know what I mean?
And acupuncture has a lot to do with seasons, doesn't it?
Well, it definitely has a relationship to seasons, because in the Chinese medical model, we view the circulation of the energy in the body as going in a 24-hour cycle. And there's a couple of different models, actually, that look at that. One model looks at how every 2 hours the acupuncture channels kind of light up a different channel, so that the chi of the body goes through a cycle of activation of 12 acupuncture channels and 12 organs in a 24-hour cycle. Mm-hmm. And there's another model that looks at the seasons of, spring, summer, autumn, winter, and how we harmonize with those seasons.
Is there any particular hour when you're doing a treatment that it's the most beneficial?
Well, there are practitioners that focus on just that idea, and there's a couple of different traditions. Chinese medicine has a really long history. It's a 2,500-year-long written history, and during that time, China always had a population that was 10 times higher than medieval Europe, for example, and that there are more books written about Chinese medicine from antiquity than any and all other subjects combined, practically. So it was a very literary tradition. And during that time, practitioners wrote down their findings, and there's a couple of traditions in Chinese medicine where practitioners really focused on the time of day to do treatments. When you utilize those traditions, you might tell a patient, oh, I need to work on your kidneys, come back at 5 in the afternoon, or I want to work on your digestion, so come at 9 in the morning. And so we do factor that in. Mainly, as a practitioner, it's not necessarily convenient, for people to come at 3 in the morning for me to work on their liver or something. It's not actually that convenient for me either, to be honest with you. So try not to schedule at 3 in the morning. And so what we can do is we use that information. Because I will ask a patient, what time of day do you feel best? What time of day do you feel most tired? And I'm correlating the answer to the energy cycle that is very deeply ingrained in my memory at this point, because I've been working on it for 30 years. And that's giving me information. Oh, you feel tired after lunch? Oh, I'm thinking small intestine channel. Oh, you feel a lot of energy, first thing in the morning, I'm thinking that channel. You have this symptom of this pain at this time of day or this time of night. That tells me what channel and what organ are probably involved.
I've been studying Chinese astrology, and it really goes into what season you were born. Does acupuncture when you're looking at, do you look at their birthday or see what season they were born in?
You know, I do not examine in particular detail what season my patient was born in, or necessarily their birthday according to Chinese astrology. I think it's important, there's a few things about that I'm just going to throw out there. You don't really have to know Chinese astrology in order to practice Chinese medicine, because they are somewhat separate arts, although they can be combined quite effectively. And there are practitioners that love to combine them and do combine them. There are many aspects of Chinese astrology that were imported into China at a later date than the development of Chinese medicine. So, for example, you know, the 12 animals that we love in Chinese astrology, you know, are you a rat, are you a horse, and so on.
Right.
Those all came from Central Asia, from the Turgut people and the Kyrgyz people, and they came 1,500 years after the first developments of acupuncture. And so certainly there are acupuncture traditions that you know, had been developing for thousands of years before the import of some of these new astrological teachings. And those new astrological teachings were then merged onto very, very ancient astrological teachings. And so just to sum that up, you don't really have to practice Chinese astrology to practice Chinese acupuncture, but some practitioners like to.
Well, you really combine so many different essences with your practice, and it's like you direct each treatment according to that individual. I bet you'd even sing to that person if that was the thing you thought to do.
That's true, I would.
Okay.
That's the essence of Chinese medicine. The essence of Chinese medicine is that you can have different types of disease, but then you also have different types of people suffering from different types of disease. And so, you might take five people with multiple sclerosis, but see four different patterns or three different patterns. So we look at the disease. We want to know the energy of the disease, the quality of the disease, but we also want to know exactly who is this person that is suffering from this imbalance. And most deeply in Chinese medicine, we look at We have a very radically different view of what is reality fundamentally. To really practice Chinese medicine, you have to hold that we have this physical reality, but then we also have a qi body or an energy body. Now, frankly, Western medicine hasn't caught up to the energy body yet because they're so profoundly based in this new idea of scientific materialism, which has really swept the world in the last 200 years. And I mean, if you want to really think about what is the actual sort of thought mean that has overtaken the planet, it certainly wasn't communism, it wasn't really capitalism, it's been scientific materialism. Now, Chinese medicine actually stands ahead of that. It says, you know, okay, there's a physical body, but we've got this energy body too. And, you know, so that's where the practice of Qigong and all the teachings of all the Qigong traditions comes in, and it says, no, you know, with a little bit of effort, a little bit of work, you can develop this energy body and you can feel this energy body and work with it. And the idea is that this energy body is like a template, like an architect. It's holding an architectural type of template for the functioning of your internal organs. So we have to look at the physical body of the patient, but we've also got to look at their energy. But then we've got to go deeper because we have to look at their spirit, the Shen, as we call it in Chinese medicine. Now, one of the foundational statements in the original book of acupuncture, and the Neijing book, in the first line of the eighth chapter of the Lin Shu portion of the Neijing book, it says, all acupuncture is based in the spirit, is based in the Shen. So when I'm with a patient, I have to know their physical body. Like, I understand what the disease is. Oh, you've got muscle sclerosis. You've got demyelinated, you know, sheaths around your nerves and so on. But I've got to understand their qi. What's going on with the chi? I've got to take the pulses. I've got to check out each of the acupuncture channels. And I will actually check the energy of each of the 24 acupuncture channels in most of my patients. But then I've got to know the Shen. That means I've got to know what's in this person's heart. You know, what's this? What's happening on an emotional and mental level? And even beyond that, I may need to know the spiritual body. And the spiritual body is having to do with one's purpose, and one's karma, and one's ancestral information. you know, maybe something that this person's dealing with in their physical body has to do with their great-grandmother, or that maybe their alcoholic tendencies have to do with their grandfather who was an alcoholic and never kind of worked that out. Or maybe it's a past life information. Or maybe those two are one and the same, right? So we have this other, this fourth body, the spiritual body, where you actually have the influences of your karma, your past lives, ancestral information. And so to really be a good practitioner, you want to see the whole person, and the whole person is all of that. It's the physical, the energy, the mind, and then the spiritual influences too. And then you can grasp what the disease is. Oh, I see. It's a painful elbow. You've got tennis elbow, lateral epicondylitis, but also you're having issues with your boundaries. You feel like people are crowding you in and you can't find your elbows. But also, the energy, the chi, is maybe blocked in your large intestine channel, and maybe you've got some constipation, and that's actually weakening the channel of energy that passes through the elbow. And then maybe also there's a spiritual influence there, or there's a life lesson there. Right, so when you put it all together, when you see the whole picture, that's when you grasp the actual issue. And once you see it, then it's easy to figure out what to do.
We might let people know what the word qi means. They might not be able
to see it. Qi is energy. And qi is something that I think everybody at one point or another is clear that they've felt. Qi is this sense of vitality inside your body. And if you ever stop for a minute and take a few deep breaths and then relax your body, and you put your hands out in front of you, and as you breathe in, you pull your hands apart a little bit, and as you breathe out, you push your hands together a little bit. Very often, after a few minutes of doing this in a relaxed way, you'll feel the sensation of some kind of energy between your hands or around your hands. That's what you're feeling there is the qi. Sometimes people will feel the qi when they exercise, and they're running, and they get that sort of calm feeling. They feel all their energy. Oftentimes people will feel the qi when dancing. And if you go out dancing and you pause after dancing for a little while, you might notice, oh, you feel this cohesive sense of the energy movement in your body. And very often when making love, people will have very clear experiences of their qi. That's what you're feeling when you feel the qi is you're feeling the first layer of what I would have to basically call a non-physical type of energy. But it's an energy that works very closely with the physical body. It adheres to the physical body. It's quite tangible, and you can definitely learn how to strengthen the qi through qigong exercises and using other methods too.
Now, when you first get a new patient, do you scan their body for their qi?
Yeah, well, the first thing I want to do when I see a new patient is not to have a lot of ideas in my head. Because there's a value to passing through a moment of emptiness, a moment of just receptivity without any conclusions, without any ideas. And, you know, when you oftentimes if you go to a Western medical doctor and, you know, they look at the lab tests and they start thinking immediately. And really, because we want to understand, we want to help somebody, right? A patient comes to us, we want to help them. Immediately we start thinking, oh, maybe they have this, maybe they have that. And all that thinking can be very helpful. I'm not against thinking about, you know, our patients and how we can help them. But there is this beautiful moment of not letting yourself have to know anything, where you can just sit with a person and listen to them, but let yourself be a little empty of sort of any sort of idea about what's going on. And when I first started practicing acupuncture, this kind of freaked me out because I had studied for many years, and then I started going in with patients when I opened my clinic, and I would pass into this experience of not knowing anything. And, of course, that makes you feel insecure when you spend years trying to know stuff. And then I started to learn to really trust it. And so I let myself often pass through a moment, a doorway, a portal of not really knowing stuff. And then I listen to them, and then I perceive the shen. I perceive the mental and emotional nature of the person by receptivity, fundamentally by what the psychologist Carl Gustav Jung called, the projection and counterprojection, where you feel in your own body, in your own mind, how the person is doing, and you kind of examine them to see if what you're feeling matches their experience of reality. After that, I take the pulses, which is a traditional Chinese way of tuning into the body, tuning into the energy of the body. And then normally what I do is I actually pay close attention to the qi itself. I will actually mentally and with my hands scan over the body. This is a qigong technique. And tune into the internal organs and tune into the acupuncture channels. I want to know the real specifics and the mechanics of what's going on with the qi. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So I'll at some point actually check the qi in every one of the acupuncture channels until I've got a clear sense about, you know, what's up.
that empty space you were talking about, did you learn that on your own, or is that a technique they teach?
Well, you know, when I first started studying Chinese medicine, I was with, I would say, very advanced teachers. I was lucky. I was very fortunate. I connected with people who really had an advanced level of development, and so their abilities were very far-reaching, and their clairvoyance was quite far-reaching, and their mastery of qi was far-reaching. And so that inspired me to keep on studying, keep on practicing. And then when I went through the more orthodox schooling, where you have to memorize a lot of information and take exams, I found that a lot of that orthodox teaching had lost some of the higher level, had lost some of the more internal and higher level aspects of the art. And partly that is a historical, there's a historical reason for that, because when Chinese medicine became absorbed in communist China, it was kind of cleaned up in order to match the scientific materialism of the Marxist dialectic. And so the sort of the more sort of woo-woo and spirit-based and qi-based even aspects of the art were downplayed, and instead was more emphasized as, you know, this kind of sense of, okay, you take the pulses, you look at the tongue, and you sort of put it all together in your mind. So, you know, this going into the, through that doorway of not knowing was not something I was formally taught in acupuncture school, but it was definitely something which I learned through the practice of qigong and meditation and through shamanic practice too.
Now, is there anything at the moment that you have added that maybe was a surprise to you, or, you know, when you began doing it, but what are you into at the present time?
Thank you for that question. Well, at the moment, I'm quite inspired to do breath work with people. I've been using, let me just explain what breath work is a little bit, what I mean by that. There is a technique of rapid, deep breathing, which used to be generally called rebirthing. Some people know it as radiance breathwork or holotropic breathwork. And this is a technique that I was introduced to when I think I was 18 or 19 years old, and practiced fairly extensively, took a number of workshops and did sessions with people who guided me in that practice and learned that technique. And it's quite a strong technique. Over the years, over the last 20 years, I've used it quite often, actually probably at this point, I suppose, thousands of times, because I've seen a lot of patients for the last 20 years. So it's a technique that I will use periodically in my practice. And one of the things I found useful about the technique is that it's very helpful for freeing up emotional energy that is bound in the qi body, bound in the physical body. It's very helpful in opening up the energy flow so that a person is more connected to spirit. Now, the thing about this rapid deep breathing is it's not really a try this at home type of technique. Because it does throw the body into a hyperventilation state, it's not for everybody. There are definitely medical conditions which preclude the idea of practicing it. But, you know, with supervision, it's actually a very, very safe technique if done correctly. And so I've worked with thousands of patients and supported them in going through breathwork sessions. I found it especially useful for people dealing with sexual trauma, emotional trauma, anxiety states, depression states, but with a caveat that it's not appropriate for everybody. You know, sometimes if somebody is in an acute reactivation of anxiety or an acute psychiatric meltdown, then it's not an appropriate technique. And again, there are physical conditions which preclude it being a safe technique. So with that caveat, you know, I've been using it very successfully in my practice. And so about a year ago, I decided to start offering it as a group event, because it's hard to time it into my acupuncture practice, because I might need to have a person brief for an hour and a half, but I've got a busy acupuncture clinic going on around that person. So it's actually easier for me to supervise a small group of between, say, 8 and 15 people who are all doing the technique together. And so that's what we do. Once a month in downtown San Jose at Solar Power Yoga, I lead a group which is limited to about 12 people, and we've had between 8 and 12 people coming. And I take people on a three-hour journey, and I call this spiritual journey breath work. And it's a good experience for people. Powerful. And tomorrow night, I'm doing it at the Chi Center in Santa Cruz.
Wow. So this is when you're doing acupuncture on people,
mm-hmm.
you find them, their emotions may be sticking and it gets in the way of helping them, and then this breath work can do the next step?
Well, that's definitely one of the potential indications for breath work. You know, it's my understanding that every disorder, every illness, typically has a manifestation on each of the four levels. In other words, it has a manifestation at the level of the spiritual body, the mental and emotional body, the chi body, and the physical body. So when I'm working with acupuncture, I'm using the acupuncture to move the chi body, and I'm using my words and my interaction with the patient to move the shin body, and maybe I'm guiding them to help them to uncover or to contact those aspects of their mental and emotional processing that are actually contributing to or causing or connected to the particular illness that they're suffering from. So breathwork is one of the techniques that's quite useful to get a deeper activation, a deeper releasing of the emotions, but also it's not just about emotions. The breathwork can also release actual bound-up parts of the fascia. It can release bound-up energy in the body. And it's just a useful technique to connect people to their spiritual nature.
Wow, I'm surprised that the breath work would release fascia, but maybe. Wow, that's incredible. You might describe what fascia is.
Yeah, well, the fascia is the connective tissue that surrounds the organs fundamentally. So you've got connective tissue that wraps around your pelvic organs and the organs inside your belly and the organs inside your chest. And the fascia is the connective tissue that wraps everything. And there are a lot of people in the last 40, 50 years who've sort of been understanding that fascia has its own qualities, its own biophysical qualities that can be released. And that's where we get the whole idea of rolfing, to actually go in and release fascial holding. And that as fascia releases and moves, it also seems to oftentimes connect to and help to release emotional and mental holding patterns, especially unconscious emotional and mental trauma that's held in the body. It can be very usefully kind of opened up through working with fascia and through breath work.
You know, and people, you know, talking about breath work, I'm thinking sometimes when you're watching a movie or maybe you're talking to someone and you become upset or whatever, if you're, you know, conscious of the fact how you're breathing, maybe people, you know, from time to time have noticed how they breathe differently. I was going to say this is, now I wonder if that pattern gets stuck in the mental area and can cause problems according to what's taken place in an individual's life.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the most common ways that I think the trauma gets stored is when the ego structure is not able to deal with this and still survive as an ego structure. And this happens in childhood, it happens in early childhood. And many psychologists nowadays are looking at a model where they're saying, you know, it seems that how we embody, how we actually attach into physical embodiment is often very associated with traumatic shocks as a system. And when you release those traumatic shocks at a physical level, it can free up whole areas of experience. And so that's why this kind of breathing exercise originally was called rebirthing. Originally it was introduced into the West by Leonard Orr, who learned the technique or developed the technique under the guidance of his spiritual teacher. And he called it rebirthing because he felt that you could actually go back through those places where you went unconscious in the process of incarnating from conception all the way through your life in the womb until right the way through your birth and your early childhood experiences. And indeed, when people do spiritual journey breathwork consistently for a little while, they'll often find that layers of felt emotion will release out of the body, and sometimes memories of early childhood or memories of birthing experiences, memories of prenatal experiences will oftentimes kind of peel off and release out of the person. And this is quite useful. You know, there is this sort of sense that we kind of get wound up into a little ball of energy that attaches into physical form. And when we die, that attaching energy sort of unspins and unwinds, but it goes very fast. And it's pretty hard to stay conscious of when you're dying. So one of the ideas behind rebirthing is that by practicing clearing that bound-up, wound-up energy at these very early sort of levels, then when it's time to actually make your transition and die, then it's a smooth, so I would say a smoother process, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. I don't think there's many people out there that thinks about their transitional period after we leave, but it really helps.
Yeah, it helps next Monday morning, too.
Right. Oh, okay.
Because it's all about how we are embodied and what our fundamental beliefs are. And very often our fundamental beliefs are stacked on top of deep, primitive, semi-conscious feeling states. And those deep semi-conscious feeling states are sort of attached into, quite often, physical traumas that get locked in and stored into the body.
So actually, if you can release that, it can change your destiny, or...
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, that's an interesting question in acupuncture, too. The idea, well, does a healer change the patient's destiny? It's a tricky question to answer, isn't it?
Yes. Maybe they're destined to see you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my view is that once they're in my clinic, the destiny brought them there. And that, you know, oftentimes how far we want to go in our healing is a choice. And yet at the same time, it's a destiny that gives us that opportunity.
But, you know, when the doors are opened and the body shifts, that is the transition. I mean, that is literally maybe new insight. Maybe the body functions differently. Definitely it does change the destiny. Of that person, it changes the thought system so that they can function in a different way.
I actually agree with you. I'd say absolutely. I think that you know, destiny is, I think we're like ships that can course correct every minute. And in a sense, we're continuously course correcting. But when we course correct according to a higher level of integration, then, you know, things turn out better. And you see this most clearly in trauma. If a child has gone through intense physical or sexual trauma, one of the most common things you'll see happen is that the ego cannot really stay non-fragmented and hold that trauma in consciousness. And so it simply puts it away to be dealt with later. It simply doesn't address that whole area, and very often the person will forget what happened. And then they're going through the course of their life, and that's an energy inside them that wants to come out, if you like. It wants to come up to consciousness. And it's an understanding I have that every aspect of what we have to deal with is held in our unconscious, but it will come up during the course of a lifetime, normally. It will come up. And so if somebody's gone through trauma and they don't really remember it, that trauma will start acting inside them and altering their choices. And you'll see these very clear patterns of, you know, choosing to be in the wrong relationship or choosing limiting circumstances until the trauma is remembered, released, integrated, and the person can move on.
Well, it's almost as though we hold our ancestors' trauma also.
There is that too. that's that fourth body, that spiritual body. And in breathwork, very often people will have some contact on that level. They will have, you know, contact with the numinous realms, contact with angels or spirits or guides, or they'll have access to remembering a past life that may be influencing what is happening in their current life. And I think the key here is consciousness. I don't believe that everybody has to remember all their past lives all the time in order to, you know, be effective in the world. And in fact, I think quite a lot of that is according to typology. You know, everybody has a different way of processing information. It could be sensate and kinesthetic, or it could be auditory, or it could be more intuitive. And not everybody necessarily needs the same access points to achieve the same end result. I think it's important to remember. But having said that, a lot of people get benefit from remembering past life information. I don't try and force that issue, but if it's there, it's there. If it comes up, it comes up. And oftentimes in breathwork, those kind of layers will come up, and they're useful.
It was supposed to come up if it comes up. Well, I had a person I knew that she was carrying a dark energy, and she didn't know where it was from, why, and she found out that her sister, who she thought was her sister, and was actually her mother, and her mother was her grandmother, and there was a deep, dark secret for many years in their family, and she carried the load of that secret without knowing it.
Yeah. So, that makes sense.
Pardon me?
That makes sense that she would be carrying something from that, yeah.
So, I mean, that's just an example of what we may be carrying that we don't know why or where it's coming from.
I think very often we will choose to take on a struggle that one of our ancestors struggled with and maybe failed to integrate. So I think it's not uncommon that, you know, we'll choose to work with an addictive tendency or an negative emotional pattern, and actually it's ancestral information. And in a sense, you could say we have a tidal wave of ancestral information needing to be integrated. And that's a lot of the struggle you see in our society. You know, it's like we've all got these impulses, and not all of these impulses are necessarily really exactly personal. And very often I've seen in my practice that when a patient's parents die, they will take on some part of the parent's story that didn't get completed. You know, so there's some aspect of the mother or the father's life and stories that didn't really get fully worked out. When the parent dies, they'll often take it on. Now, it's not like everybody automatically always does. That's an interesting sort of subtlety to that in terms of who takes on what when. But it's not unusual to see that people will take it on. You know, they may take on different karmic challenges at different times in their life.
Now, when you started practicing acupuncture, did you think that you would get involved actually in psychology or psychiatry along the way, along with it?
Well, I did. I sort of pretty much knew that from the beginning because I was with my first teacher, now lives in North Carolina. His name is Sangi Han. He's a very high-level Tai Chi practitioner and Qigong practitioner and Taoist healer. And he had very highly developed sight, inner sight. And so he would oftentimes look at a person he was working with, and we would sort of sit in the back of the room, and then, you know, when they left, he would tell us what he was perceiving, and basically he would read all of their past lives. So he had a very visual clairvoyance. He could see things very, very clearly. And so I understood at an early age. I started studying with him when I was 18 and studied pretty intensively with him for 7 years. So from a pretty early age, I understood that there was a deeper, you know, process going on here, and that I just had to develop myself to kind of work with it, you know.
I kind of, from what Paula said and what you're saying, I almost gather if someone, for like in a household, the mother that wasn't the mother and the grandmother that wasn't the grandmother, it was reversed. There's like a, like when you drop a pebble in the water, there's vibrations going out from those people continuously. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's received by that other person, and whether they know what's really going on or not, you know, through their whole life.
Well, it's been told and known to me for many years that when you start healing yourself, you're changing everyone around you. You're actually helping them heal. Do you find that true, Adam?
Well, I believe that to be true, very much so. I think, yeah, I mean, I've seen it in my own life, and I've seen it in the lives of my patients. And that's the beauty of healing. It's like, the interesting qualities about healing is that very often people will almost not notice that they just got better because it's more natural to be healthy than to be sick. And so they'll just be like, oh, yeah, I'm feeling good. And so they're like back to their normal state. Right? And I've had some funny examples of it. I just, in fact, had an example with a patient who had acute pancreatitis, which is a very serious issue. And actually, we got a very quick turnaround. In about 3 weeks, we'd knocked out all his pancreatitis symptoms. And he sort of barely noticed because he was just back to what felt natural. And I think on the same with emotional, psychological healing. When we make a shift like that, we kind of just land back more in who we are, and everything will correspondingly improve.
Now, do different organs go along with different emotions?
They do. Yeah, that is a really fascinating subject.
What emotion would the pancreas be along with?
You know, that's a really good question, because Chinese medicine never really paid much attention to the pancreas. You know, when we talk about organs in Chinese medicine, we talk about the spleen and the kidney and so on, and it's actually not really, we're not really talking about those physical organs. When the Chinese talked about organs, they talked about an organ system, a whole energy system. So when I say kidney, in the Chinese context, I really mean your physical kidneys and your bladder and your adrenals and your thyroid and aspects of your pituitary and your ovaries and testes and your brain and your marrow and, I mean, this whole system inside the body. So each of those systems is connected to a core emotion, a fundamental core human emotion. And those core human emotions can be afflictive, painful emotions, and they also have got a flip side where they can flip over and they can be very redemptive kind of emotional states. Yeah. Did you ask me about a specific organ?
The pancreas.
Oh, the pancreas. I'm sorry, I lost track. So the Chinese never really looked at the pancreas particularly, but recent practitioners doing a lot of meditating on different organs had a couple of interesting ideas about the pancreas. Firstly, the pancreas has got a twofold function, right? You know, one aspect of the pancreas is what we call the endocrine pancreas, and it makes insulin, right? And insulin sort of sends this message to all the cells of your body to open their little cell mouths, and all 100 trillion of them eat the food they need. They absorb the glucose and the fatty acids and the amino acids they need, right? It enables them to open up their transport channels through their cell walls and actually start feeding and getting nourishment, right? So that function of the pancreas looks like what the Chinese call the spleen energy, which is this mothering, nurturing, feeding kind of energy. But there's another aspect of the pancreas, which is where the pancreas, we call this in Western physiology, the exocrine pancreas. And here, this is where the other cells in the pancreas produce your digestive enzymes. And these enzymes have this very fiery, intense kind of nature that they go into the small intestine and they split apart, you know, proteins, the carbohydrates and the fats and so on into their component smaller molecules so you can absorb them. And this splitting apart is a very sort of masculine, fiery energy. So really you can see the pancreas has a twofold kind of aspect. And what I would say about the pancreas is that when it's making insulin and feeding all your cells, it's like the mother, the mother archetype. And when it's producing the digestive enzymes that split apart and literally kill the food and split it apart, then it's acting with a masculine energy, a masculine fiery energy. So from that point of view, when we think about what's the emotion connected with the pancreas, it could go either way. If it's diabetes, we might be looking at, well, life doesn't feel sweet enough, right? And so there's that relationship to life not feeling sweet and the need to eat sweets and the imbalance in the body's ability to regulate how the person nurtures themselves, right? So very often with diabetes, there's a deep lack of self-nurturing and an attempt to replace that self-nurturing with food. And often the feeling of disappointment, like life doesn't really feel as sweet as I think it should or something like that. And then the flip side is with the exocrine pancreas producing the enzymes. This is the pancreas that is actually connected quite a lot to creativity and to a certain vitality and power of getting involved with life and going into, operating from inspiration. So there's quite a complex energetic with the physical pancreas itself. It's not a, I can't give you a one-line answer to it.
Well, there's so much diabetes in our country now.
Yeah, it
relates back to the pancreas then.
Well, diabetes definitely, on a national level, diabetes relates to the pancreas, but diabetes is fundamentally a disorder that originates in an imbalanced diet. Like when we don't get the right kind of central fatty acids, when we have an imbalance between the omega-3s and the omega-6s, and when we have the availability of enormous amounts of white sugar. I mean, we want sugar. You know, human beings have an infantile stage in their development, just like any other animal, where we drink breast milk, and breast milk is sweet, and we crave it. And when sweet foods in nature are naturally found occurring with the vitamins and the minerals and the cofactors to help you digest them, they're not really going to cause a long-term kind of diabetic process. But when we have access to so much fat and so much of the fat is poor quality and so much sugar and so much of the sugar is devoid of the nutritional substances to balance out its effect, then on a physical level, the long-term result of that is going to be that the pancreas starts to hypertrophy. Now, animal studies clearly show that when you feed animals cooked food, by the time they're middle-aged, their pancreases are swelling up. And the pancreas is swelling up because it can't produce enough enzymes to keep up. Now, those enzymes I talked about, the ones that split apart the food, those very fiery sort of masculine type of energy, when they're not actually splitting apart your food, they're going straight into your bloodstream and clearing your bloodstream of cellular debris and extra protein. And this is something that Western medicine doesn't fully acknowledge, but you can examine the scientific proof of this. So if your pancreas starts hypertrophying and you're constantly eating cooked food, there's very little chance for your pancreas to regulate and clear the cellular debris. And as the pancreas hypertrophies, it gets weaker, and that's when you get the onset of diabetes. And with diabetes, of course, we have the clogged, clogged blood vessels because it's not able to clear the debris, so then the lining of the arteries gets congested with mucousy, clumpy kind of stuff because the enzymes can't strip it off. And then you get the clogged up arteries, which is the real danger with diabetes. Diabetes just looks like accelerated aging, because with diabetes comes blocked arteries, and then you have kidney problems, retinal problems, and of course, most important, you have heart disease.
Wow. That's such a good description.
Sounds like we better be paying attention to our diet.
Well, what it argues for is to eat foods that are in their whole form, to try to curb your instincts to, I mean, we all have instincts, right? I do anyway, I have instincts to eat unhealthy foods because it's natural. We want fat and we want sugar because, in nature, I mean, we evolved in a very natural order where you have to get as much fatty food and high caloric value food into you because you're going to be starving during the winter. In that regard, human beings and bears are a little bit similar. You know, the bears go into a pre-diabetic state every time August comes around, and they start eating loads and loads of salmon and loads of berries, and they put on a couple of hundred pounds, and if you measure their blood, they're actually in a pre-diabetic to diabetic state, but they know they're going to sleep all winter and burn it off. Human beings have got the similar kind of reflex, and it's actually a reflex triggered by the lengthening light. Now, as we're all exposed to artificial light, the light in the refrigerator never has to go off, right? It can keep going on all night, and you keep on feeding. You've got this instinct to feed and put on weight because you need to survive a time of famine and fasting, which never actually comes. So there's a few answers to this. One is developing some self-discipline, and it's easier to do when you eat healthy foods, because when you're eating healthy foods, your instincts get healthier. And the other is periodic fasting and juice fasting. It's very helpful for resetting the body's apostat, so that you desire maybe a little less food and you desire healthier food. And, of course, talking fasting in this culture is anathema. I mean, this is the opposite of a fasting culture, right? Every traditional culture put days in their calendar or weeks in their calendar or months in their calendar where they said, you need to eat less during this time. And the reason for that is you want to have a period where your body starts to burn through its stores. And of course you want to burn through the stores because it's in the storage, in the fat tissue, but that's where we carry our toxins. Now, it's never been more true than today because we now carry so many toxins. I mean, the average baby now, when it's breastfed, receives its lifetime safe dose of dioxins in the first 6 months of breastfeeding. And that's just dioxins. That's not to mention DDT. That's not to mention uranium. You know, recent studies have shown that the elevated uranium levels around the world are actually predisposing people also to diabetes. So there are serious issues of toxicity. One of the natural ways the body can detoxify is through juice fasting. And, of course, you can use herbs and things to do that too.
How can we stay away from uranium exposure?
You know, it's not easy to stay away from uranium exposure. After they shelled Iraq with depleted uranium shells, they found much higher levels of uranium in the air over England a week later. Right? They threw up so much dust when they hit Iraq with all those depleted uranium shells that they spread depleted uranium through the passage of dust in the high atmosphere within weeks rapidly around the planet. And this is what happens. We've had several thousand nuclear tests since the 1950s and 1940s, I guess, the late 40s. Now we have nuclear meltdowns like Three Mile Island and Chernobyl, and we have the depleted uranium game, and people don't want to bring this to your attention. I'll talk about this next week on my radio show, because I just read an interesting study about how high the uranium levels are around Marin. And, of course, we know that Marin is the breast cancer center of the world in terms of the highest likelihood of developing breast cancer is in Marin. So these are, you know, serious environmental issues, and they predispose people to cancer, heart disease, and diabetes. And there's something you can do about it. There's certain herbs you can take, there's vitamins you can take, and perhaps most importantly, there's detoxification protocols and juice fasting protocols where you can, you know, without too much suffering, you can clear the stuff out of you. And on a physical level, that has a lot to do with the development of diabetes. Now, if we talk like emotionally and spiritually, how come this culture is, you know, developing so much diabetes and so much, you know, heart disease and atherosclerosis? That's an interesting question. And I would say the real issue is heart disease. Heart disease is pretty much the main killer, although cancer's getting up there. And heart disease is really about this blockage of the arteries. And
Inflammation
and also stuff lining the walls of the arteries. Now, heart disease did not occur 200 years ago very much at all. You can look at hospital admission records. The first heart attack was only described about 120, 130 years ago in France. It wasn't that common a way to get sick and to die back then. It certainly wasn't a 1 in 2 risk or whatever it is now. It's very 1 in 3 risk. It's very, very high now. And what about our culture is blocking the blood supply to our own hearts? Because that's what we're talking about with heart disease, and that's, of course, what the increased risk of diabetes is, coronary artery blockage. So really we're saying that on a mass cultural level, millions and millions of humans are voting to be taken off this planet by having the blood supply to their own heart get blocked. Now, we know that takes a few years. It can proceed at the rate of 30% of blockage of the arteries per year, so it can proceed relatively fast. But what are we doing emotionally and mentally that as we're sitting there watching TV on the couch and feeding ourselves with a soda and some candy, what are we doing emotionally and spiritually that is blocking the ability of our bodies to feed our own hearts? Aha, that's an interesting question, isn't it? When you think about the heart spiritually, you know, Chinese medicine asserts that the heart is the ruling organ, the number one organ. And it's the number one organ because the heart energetically houses your true spiritual nature, that part of you that existed before you were born and will exist after you die, that never has any fluctuational variation. It's that pure consciousness. That is housed in the human heart.
And it's supposed to have its own brain.
Yeah, but as we block access to it, so physically we block the blood supply to the organ that holds that spiritual energy, right? And you get an epidemic.
Adam, let me, before we go too far, we've got only about another 3 minutes here.
Okay.
I just want to let people know your website is adamatman.com, and that's A-D-A-M, and then Atman, A-T-M-A-N.com. You do have an event coming up in Santa Cruz. What is it? Is that this Friday or
tomorrow? That's tomorrow.
No,
at 8 p.m.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow at 8 p.m. Friday. It's in Santa Cruz at the Chi Center in Santa Cruz. And everybody, of course, is very invited to come to that. And so if you're interested, go to my website, which is, as you mentioned, www.adamatman.com, and click on Spiritual Journey Breathwork, which is a link on the left-hand side. It's the seventh or eighth link down on the left-hand side. That'll take you to a page that describes the breathwork process. And we're going to be doing it from 8 p.m. till 11 p.m. at the Chi Center in Santa Cruz, which is on the east side of Santa Cruz. But I would suggest if anybody wants to do it, read through my page about it, because there are definitely some contraindications. Sometimes it may not be appropriate for everybody. And if you have any questions, you can always call me.
Okay, the other thing is that you also will be in San Jose in case people don't want to go over the hill.
Absolutely. Yep, I have a session coming up in about 3 weeks in San Jose. We just did a great one last week. It was very good. And so let me just get that date for you. The next one in San Jose is going to be on October the 21st at Solar Power Yoga in downtown San Jose. And the best way to sort of access all this info is my website. Go to adamatman.com, click on Spiritual Journey Breathwork. And if you have any questions after that, just call me on my cell phone. Can I give out that number?
Sure. Absolutely.
It's 408-476-9799.
One more time, Adam.
Yeah, 408-476-9799.
You know, there's so much that I'm sure we haven't touched upon. We've got to have you back.
Great. Hey, there's a lot to talk about,
Adam,
though.
Yeah,
you have your
own
show.
So he gets messages on this every week.
Yeah, but let's see. Okay, so it's from 10 until 11 every Thursday, but the fourth Thursday of the month, and you're not, not on.
That's right.
Other than that, you're on every Thursday. And I forgot, how many years have you been on now?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Same as we have.
About 10 years, huh?
It's been 10 or 11 years, I think, yeah.
Yeah, because you came on just like a month or two after we were on.
It's been a fun ride.
Yeah.
Can I just mention a couple of other things? So I have 1 minute just to touch on a couple of other things.
We want to announce something.
Okay, go for it.
Okay. I was going to say the Holistic Arts Fair is coming about this weekend, the 25th and 26th, is at the Divine Science Community Center. And, wow, the admission is free. All events are free, and the parking's free.
Yes, on Hicks Avenue in San Jose.
Yes, and all kinds of speakers and psychics, and you name it. It's you know, a UFO panel with Ruben Uriarte. And
I think there's a website for them to see. It's Holistic Arts Fair.
Holistic Arts Fair. Yeah, exactly. Boy, you're good, Paula. Okay.
They can look and see who's going to be there. Yeah. And what did you want to say really quick, Adam?
I just want to let people know, if you're interested, if you go to my website, which is www.adamatman.com, you can find out about acupuncture. You can find out about a free clinic that I do every week for veterans.
Okay.
People who've been in Iraq and Vietnam and so on. It's a free treatment, and I teach students there. You can find out about juice fasting, detoxification, Qigong classes, and you can read some of my poetry.
Okay.
Thanks.
We've had
Thank
fun
you.
Having you. Thank you.
Have a wonderful week.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Take care, guys. I appreciate being on. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And until next week, we have 2 hours next week between 11 and 1.